The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
Today we're recording from Women in Technology Leadership Awards, talking with some incredible finalists and awardees. In this section, we're talking to Joe Decker. Joe Decker is Vice President of General Dynamics. Joe, first, thank you for joining us today. I have a question for you. What characteristics would you describe that really have really led to your success?
Yeah, that's a hard question to ask ourselves about our success. I guess always being willing to learn, work really hard, and be adaptable in whatever you do in your work environment, and learn to rely on others to help you as well, because you can't become successful without others being a part of helping you be successful. So I think those are some of the qualities, are, you know, working together as a great team, and always being willing and able to learn, and I guess never really get complacent as well.
Joe, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started in the information technology business.
Sure, thank you. My background is that I was a federal employee working for the Department of Defense for 30 years. I was a civil servant in the senior executive service and supported most of the military Navy leadership throughout my career. And as part of that, because the military deploys, the civilian executives run the business part of the Department of Defense. And certainly as part of that, you become very involved in the information technology and business systems as well. So I sort of naturally migrated into that type of area, and which is what helped me land in General Dynamics IT.
So what characteristics do you think is the biggest strength that you have that makes you so successful? I mean, you've had an incredible career.
Again, a willingness to learn and be adaptable in any environment. Learn to leverage the strength of others and their knowledge, because in my jobs in the Pentagon, we moved around a lot, and there were a lot of technical folks that you had to rely on, and you, because you can't do it alone and you can't learn it all, so you definitely learn to rely on the expertise of others.
So Joe, let's step back in time, right? 30 years ago, when you were making the decision what you wanted to do, having, I guess, just graduated from college and figuring out what was going to be your first job, how did you decide upon the Navy?
I didn't decide. They decided for me. I actually had come to Washington, D.C., and had interviewed on the Hill and had actually accepted a job offer for a congressman, and got a phone call from Naval Intelligence, and they wanted to interview me, and I didn't apply with them. The interview and the opportunity obviously intrigued me and interested me, and started me on my career with the Navy, and I found that I just loved working with the Department of Defense and the Navy and the Marine Corps.
So growing up, was there a particular person or event in your life that inspired you and made you decide that you were going to have this great career?
You know, no single person probably. It's always a lot of people that impact you and influence your thinking. My father was probably one of them. He taught me that there was virtually nothing I couldn't do. I helped him do a lot of different things that were probably non-traditional for young girls at the time, and he instilled in me a sense that there was nothing I couldn't do and learn. And throughout my career, same thing. Leaders gave me opportunities in areas that I wasn't always probably the most qualified, but they gave me the opportunity to learn and grow, and had I not had that, I wouldn't have been able to progress in my career. So lots of folks in my life.
just out of curiosity, do you have any brothers, or what is your, what was your family, the makeup?
My father was in the military. He was in the Air Force. I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we moved around a lot. So that was probably part of what you had, how you, why you had to learn to be adaptable in different environments, and I think it helped serve you well as an adult, too.
And the reason I asked the question about brothers is because you mentioned that your dad had you doing some non-traditional girl things, and both Aileen and I share in common that we have sisters and no brothers, and so I often wonder if that's why, you know, my father didn't have a boy to do the traditional boy things, and so he had to have somebody to do them with, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Were there any major obstacles or setbacks you encountered along your way, and can you tell us the story?
Sure, we all encounter major obstacles and setbacks, and again, there are probably a lot of them that I have been through during my career. Certainly, you know, being in the defense environment as a woman has not always been easy. I wasn't in the battlefield, and so a lot of times when military folks worked for me, I didn't have what they viewed as perhaps the credibility. And so I had to work a little extra hard and learn a little bit more to be able to be credible and garner their respect when I worked with them. And so that was something that I was challenged with from time to time. And being a parent as well, and working long hours and trying to balance parenting and a professional career and during a time when it wasn't always as accepted as it is today. So those are some of the challenges.
Now that Secretary Ash Carter has changed the ability for women to be able to be in combat positions, do you think it will help the next generation women leaders achieve higher ranks within the organizations?
I do. I have had the wonderful opportunity to work with women naval officers, and a few of whom have gone on to very senior ranks and who are just as capable as any man. So I think, you know, again, as long as you can do the job just as well, you should be afforded the same opportunities. And there are a few of them now that have done that, that have commanded ships, that have gone into the war zone and have been just as effective as any man.
The new NORTHCOM commander.
Absolutely.
So, Joe, fast forward back to the present. Right now, you've been at General Dynamics for a couple of years. What was that transition like from being a civil servant, being in public service, to now, even though you're obviously a contractor with the government, now you're on the other side of the table in private practice?
Probably one of the most challenging aspects of transitioning out of the government to the private sector is that it's not as structured. The camaraderie is not quite the same as what we're used to in the government and working in a military institution especially. But on the other hand, as a civilian in the government, because I did work and manage a lot of the business part of the Department of Defense, a lot of things came pretty naturally to me. The other thing is I work for a great company that is, we are a defense contractor, and so a lot of the values are very similar. A lot of the people that work there have military backgrounds, and you still feel like you can contribute in your own way in industry, and so that part has actually been great. And at the same time, learn how the private sector operates. So,
earlier you brought up some of the challenges with life balance. And have you had to make trade-offs in life balance? And if you have, how do you do that? What's your secret to this success and obviously an incredible career, a wonderful family? How did you do it all?
You don't. When I mentor young women, I tell them you have to think about what you really want in life and what really is important to you in life, because no human can do everything, and you can't do everything perfectly. So you have to understand where your lines are and what you are willing to do and what you're willing to not do and what you're willing to not sacrifice. And I will tell you, I have one grown daughter. She didn't always get the time and attention that I would have liked to have given her. On the one hand, it's made her independent, and but there, you know, you can't bring back some of the time I didn't have with her. So I guess, again, you can't have it all. You can't do it all. It was interesting. One of the things my daughter said to me one day was that if I didn't have a career, I wouldn't have been as happy of a person, and I wouldn't have been as good of a mother as a consequence. And so you really have to know yourself and what is important to you, and you know, make your priorities and pick your spots. And there were times when I didn't proceed as much or as quickly in my career because I made some conscious efforts to stay in the job I was, because during that certain periods of time, my daughter was the priority.
So if you went back to the younger Joe Decker when she was graduating from college, what would you whisper into her ear to help her be even more successful in today's world?
Now that's a hard one. Be comfortable with yourself and don't second guess yourself.
Joe Decker is Vice President of General Dynamics. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we're recording at Women in Technology Leadership Awards, talking with some incredible finalists and awardees. And in this section, we're talking to Suzanne Campbell from VMware Public Sector. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you, Aileen. Thank you, Gigi. So, Suzanne, I know that you started your career at IBM, which is a great place to start, but let's turn back the clock even a little bit before that. When you were growing up, how did you decide that you wanted to be in technology, or did you not decide that? Did it just happen?
That's a great question. In high school, I loved two things. I absolutely loved foreign languages, and I really enjoyed mathematics, and my very first computer class ever, which I won't tell you what platform it was because I'll really be dating myself, but it was sort of those combination of two things that led me to pursue a degree in technology, and I started off as a computer science major and ultimately graduated with a computer science degree from Virginia Tech.
And so back then it was very rare to have women graduate with computer science degrees, and sadly it's still rare today. Women in technology, one of the things that they care a lot about is helping to get more young girls into STEM careers. What do you think we need to do to try to encourage more young people in general, but particularly young women, into STEM fields?
It's a great question, and I know it's top of mind for a lot of people. I think a lot of it is just exposure and persistence. You know, trying to show young girls they're consumers of technologies, they love technology, and I think providing them opportunities to be not just a consumer, but to interact with it, to experience a programming class or, you know, some kind of a forum. Like there was recently a STEM event in D.C. that I took my daughter and some friends to, and they loved it. They loved it. They learned a lot, and it was a different way to learn, but that hands-on and that interaction with real people doing STEM activities professionally and for research was really stimulating for them. So I think it's exposure. I think it's a conscious effort to really try to expose them to the art of the possible.
Now, do you think your daughter will follow in your footsteps and have a career in a STEM field?
I don't know. It's too early to say, but I certainly am trying to expose her to a lot of different things.
I've met your daughter, Sarah, and she can do whatever she wants. So I'm sure she's going to be very successful. I got to change this up a little bit and go back a little bit in time. Were there somebody or something in your life that encouraged you to follow, you know, in these footsteps and in joining the technology community?
You know, I think like a lot of people, are some of our earliest advisors, if you're lucky, are your family and your close friends. And I was definitely influenced by that. My father was actually also an IBMer, and he's still working today part-time in the nanotechnology field and had a wonderful management and leadership career himself for many years. So he always enjoyed what he did, and he always had a passion not just for the people, not just for the technology, but for the people that he worked with, and maintains lifelong friendship with these people. And I think that was just really inspirational to me to kind of follow your heart, follow your passions, and kind of live and breathe it. It's not just a job. It's, you know, kind of follow your passion. It's all about how you integrate your you know, your work and what you do for fun and what you do with your family.
Do you ever encounter any obstacles along the way early in your career that kind of said, hey, you know, this is not a field for me?
That's a great question. I think I was just having this conversation at the reception tonight, and I think, you know, when I started my computer science degree after about my sophomore year, I thought, you know, I'm not really sure that this is exactly what I want to do. And one of the best decisions I made was to enter the cooperative education program. And so I ended up graduating in 5 years and had that real world experience working on a variety of government contracts as a programmer. But the nature of that work was exposure to project management, exposure to coding, according to great leaders, great camaraderie, working on teams with tight deadlines. And I think that real world experience, you know, really helped me realize, wow, this is something that I really do enjoy. And it kind of put things in context for me, my education, that really, at that point, it was not, I don't want to say a means to an end, but it helped show me the end game and the big picture. And it really helped pull that together for me. So I would definitely recommend that for young people that might be listening.
Now, Suzanne, your whole career, starting from IBM, and then you've worked for other technology leaders, EMC, and then VMware, but always working with and supporting the federal government. So what's that like? I mean, I did that through much of my career, as did Aileen, but tell us your perspective on what's that like, being on the contractor vendor side of the equation, but working with the federal government.
You know, I think one of the things that's so interesting is that anything that you can find in the commercial space, you can find in the government, whether it's the military, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's the financial community. And it's just so fascinating to work in support of these missions and the leaders of these missions over time. And so I just find the diversity of the customer set very interesting and fascinating. And the mission of what they do is extremely important. And the partnership that you can develop, the projects that you can work on, and you know, really to drive kind of win-win opportunities in the government is really has been a passion, as you said, Gigi. I've definitely focused my career on the federal government, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
One of the things that we talk about often is career paths and male-dominated fields. And technology, high tech, Silicon Valley is very, very male dominated. Unlike the federal government, where it's a little bit more structured in terms of career path, particularly in the military, in terms of what boxes you need to check to get to the next level, it doesn't always work that way in high tech companies. Have you had a challenge with either being heard or climbing the career ladder?
That's a great question. I would say that I've been very blessed and very fortunate. I've worked with great leaders, men and women, in my career, and that might be a little unique for some, but I've always been very fortunate to have great leaders and coworkers. And I can't say that I've had really any big challenges, but I do think women typically have to work harder. I hope that will change, but I think, you know, when you meet top-notch women, they're truly exceptional. And, you know, so I can't say that I've necessarily encountered any obstacles, but I have encountered an incredible number of amazing women that have worked extremely hard to get to where they are.
Aileen and I always joke that we never had to wait in line at the ladies' room at any business meeting because
decisions did get made while they were in the bathroom.
Exactly, exactly.
So while we're talking about careers, let's talk about mentorship for a second. Have you ever had any major mentors in your career, and what's the best advice they possibly gave you?
You know, one of the best pieces of advice I had is it's wonderful to have mentors, and I've definitely had some in my career that have been, you know, fantastic. I think one of the best pieces of advice I had is mentorship and learning really can come from anyone in your career, whether it's someone who works for you, someone who's a peer, someone who's, you know, just someone that you admire for something that they do outside of work. I think there's so much that we can learn from each other. And so although it's wonderful to have a wonderful mentor, it's also amazing to see what you can learn from the people around you.
Have you had an opportunity to mentor? And before you answer that, and what's the best piece of advice you've ever given a mentee?
That's an excellent question. I've had the opportunity to do some formal mentoring and just some informal mentoring. in leadership positions. And I think, you know, the best piece of advice is to help people be the best that they can be. You know, what are their strengths and how do we capitalize on those strengths? How can I provide them some exposure or some different experiences that might help them get from where they are to where they want to be? And typically try to work on those things together. And I do have a couple examples of those that make me smile when I think about those.
So, example. I remember, and we had the opportunity to work together, that you did an event for your team where you gave them starfish. Why was that?
Oh, gosh, Aileen, you're going back a long way. So I brought a team together, and there's a great adage about, you know, everybody is special. And, you know, you can just save one starfish. I can't believe you remember that. That's so funny. But I wanted to make the point that everybody is unique and that everybody is special and everybody has something to contribute. And it really doesn't matter, you know, what your background is, what your gender is. You have something important to share, and we have something important to learn from you. And so that was, you know, kind of the point of that story.
Do you have any, if you went back in time to Suzanne as you were graduating from Virginia Tech, what piece of advice would you like for her to have?
That's a great question. I think enjoy the ride. You know, you will work hard. I think a lot of us work really hard, and we're very focused on doing the right thing and, you know, advancing ourselves. But I think remembering that it is a journey, and, you know, one obstacle leads to opportunity. You know, remember when things get hard, that's when the real opportunity starts, and it gets fun. So kind of enjoy the ride and embrace it.
Change is hard, but change is good.
Change is hard, but change is great.
Suzanne Campbell from VMware Public Sector. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we're recording at Women in Technology Leadership Awards, talking with incredible finalists and winners, and we're talking with awardee Camille Stewart, who is an attorney with the Department of Homeland Security. So first, thank you for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So first, I got to ask you, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into become an attorney with DHS. What was your passion? How did you get started?
So after law school, I was recruited by Cyvalence, a cybersecurity company out here in Reston, and I did a lot of their intellectual property work, their in-house legal work, and that started to bleed into broader cyber issues, incident response, phishing, malware, that kind of stuff. And then I received this presidential appointment last year and decided to take that and move over to DHS.
I guess I would take a presidential appointment.
You know, I don't know how you turn that down.
So my daughter is going to law school this fall.
Okay, great.
And studying in intellectual property. And cybersecurity law and the complexity of that is just booming. So if there's somebody like my daughter who's just getting started, what's your advice?
Don't limit yourself. There are so many things that are interesting, and you can find a way to meld and blend your passions. A lot of people said you couldn't do, you know, intellectual property and do cyber. You kind of had to choose a lane, but I found a lot of fun ways to blend the two, to have fun in IP and to learn a lot of things about cyber and be able to be effective in both. Sometimes that means switching, and sometimes that's meant doing both at the same time, but explore all your passions.
So when you were in law school, did you know you wanted to be an in-house counsel, or did you have dreams of someday being a litigator, or how did you decide where you wanted to go with law?
So for me, I went into law school knowing I wanted to do intellectual property. How to do intellectual property, I wasn't quite sure about that. I was open to litigation, but transactional work really called to me once I started doing it.
And so was there a particular, most of the people that we talk to on the show, there's a person in their life or a couple of people or maybe an event that really helped shape them and guide them for what they wanted to be. Was there somebody like that for you?
I've had a number of people like that over the course of my career and my life. I've been very lucky. The most recent is Melanie Toplinski. She is a professor at AU Law School, and she is a cyber genius. And as I've crafted this melding of professions, she's been a real force and a real support as I navigate that.
So we talked about the positive things, but were there some obstacles that you encountered along the way the complexity that goes along with cybersecurity and law, what were some of the challenges that you encountered along the way?
So it's definitely fraught with its challenges. I would say that Some are pretty generic across the board. When I graduated law school, it was kind of a tough time to be coming out of law school. So one of the things I talked about even in my video was not letting titles and things like that limit you. Finding a support system, finding people who can encourage you and guide you, even if you're not getting that guidance at work. I was the only attorney at Cyvalence, and so there wasn't, you know, kind of that top-down mentorship from a legal perspective. There were a lot of great technologists at that company, but there wasn't a legal mind. So finding that elsewhere, being creative, finding gaps and filling them. That was the thing that has propelled me most, is identifying gaps in whatever space that I'm in and seeking to fill those gaps, finding your niche and then shining.
Now, is this field is pretty dominated, technology field in general, with men. Have you encountered any challenges as being a woman and a minority?
Yes, definitely. And not even just a woman and a minority, but also being a young woman. Not a lot of people like to see a woman who, with a baby face, or even if not, just knowing that they're younger, coming in with a lot of expertise. It's something that I think we all face as women as we enter into our fields. And this one, it's a bigger problem because there are so few of us. But it's kind of a double-edged sword, because I can benefit from being the only, a new voice. Those companies and environments that value diversity of experience, diversity in general, can see the value. The others, I just kind of have to show them.
So if you were to turn around and give somebody advice who is facing some of those biases when they're sitting around the table, what's some of the strategies you use?
A strong support system outside of that environment. So friends, family, professional support, getting your strength elsewhere, because you won't always get it at work. It's hard when work feels kind of like a pressure cooker, but you can kind of release that tension and find ways to, you know, thrive through other outlets.
So I know that your current role, Camille, is a presidential appointment, which is wonderful. But when that is over, do you think you will stay in the public sector, or will you be looking to go back in the private sector?
I haven't decided yet. I mean, I have till January. I'm going to try to remain in the administration as long as possible. So, you know, as the opportunities arise, I will kind of weigh them out and go from there.
What are some of the things that you like about being in the government?
I love mission-driven work. That is very different from the private sector. There can be mission in the private sector, but everything you are doing is so mission-driven and weighing out the public good. At DHS especially, we are weighing out national security issues. It's a completely different side of the issue. I really enjoy that, and I like being of service to my country.
How old were you when you first decided you wanted to be a lawyer?
Oh my gosh, I was so young. I was the little girl who, every time my parents made me a promise, I made them sign a contract. I drafted one up, I had a witness, and it was going to be legal. So I always wanted to be a lawyer.
So you were talking about the pressure cooker earlier. We find that most successful women have outlets that they use to help deal with stress. What's yours?
Running. Running and friends. Love brunch, so
that's why you run.
Exactly. I love food.
Running to brunch.
Exactly. You got to burn it off, right? I started a brunch club, and so a lot of my friends come together once a month, and we have brunch, and we decompress, and we talk about things that are stressing us out and things that don't stress us out, and just kind of, you know, have a group of women who you can relate to and gauge strength from.
So we've interviewed over 100 women at Women in Washington. And one of the things that is consistent that we find, the two number one things that women do for outlets, number one is running. And it's, why do you think that is?
I think it's the only time that I can get out of my own head. So if that works the same way for anyone else, then I completely understand it. When you are in high pressure, high demand careers, such as the technology industry, such as the legal fields, you need a way to get out of your own head, to stop thinking through whatever problems or issues are in front of you.
So, Camille, I'm going to switch it up. The other number one, by the way, is yoga, which I think affords the same kind of opportunity
yes.
to get out of your own head. But I'm going to switch up the question for you here. Many of the women that we talk to on Women of Washington are older.
and have had their careers and their families, and we ask them about work-life balance. I'm going to change that question on you because you are just starting out. So you are in the, you know, early stages of what I can see is going to be a wonderful career. How about the choices that you're having to make, the life choices? Are you having to put other things off, like marriage, kids, starting a family, or not?
I don't know that it's a conscious choice like that. Those things will come, and as they come, I will, you know, deal with them and make room for them in my life because I want all of those things. But while they're not here, I'm fine working a lot and, you know, pursuing my passions as much as my time and my schedule will allow. And I'll make room as it comes.
Camille, you've accomplished so much in the years that you have in giving back to the United States. So first of all, for your service, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
But I got to ask you, if you were to go back and you were to see Camille, you know, starting law school, what piece of advice would you give her to help her achieve the satisfaction and success that you've been able to do in such a short period of time?
I would say networking and building community. I would have started that a lot sooner. The wisdom you garner from other women or people in general, really. The doors that open, you cannot within your circle know everyone in every area, in every arena. Your aperture opens to new possibilities, new careers, new opportunities, networking and building a community of like-minded people in a variety of different ways like-minded, whether it's they're ambitious or they're interested in technology or they're women or they're, you know, in the public sector, whatever those communities are, developing a variety of communities.
Camille Stewart, an attorney with the Department of Homeland Security. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we're recording from Women in Technology Leadership Awards, talking with some of the incredible finalists and winners, and we have a winner with us here right now, Carolyn Perrant of LiveSafe.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Carolyn. So tell us about LiveSafe. I'm not familiar with what you guys do.
So LiveSafe is a mobile safety platform that is really designed to be the do something for see something, say something. And we provide a mobile application where people can submit tips, texts, videos around anything they need concerning safety, and it automatically connects on that tip with their local safety officials. If they're at a university and they're a student, it connects them to the campus safety officials. And if they're work in a company, then it connects them to their corporate security.
So what a great idea. How did you guys come up with that idea?
So the company was founded really as a triumph over tragedy. Our founder, Christina, was one of the most injured individuals in the Virginia Tech shooting. And after she healed, she vowed that she wanted to build a platform that would prevent incidents like this. Because what was discovered was, prior to the Virginia Tech shooting, there were 24 different indicators based on what the shooter said, their behavior, what they posted, and what they did. And none of that information was really readily available to security officials. So the goal is prevention. Can we use crowdsourced intelligence to get the information to officials to prevent incidents from happening?
You know, that I have to tell you, this one strikes me personally. My son was at Virginia Tech during that, and he was a sophomore. And the university came under such criticism because they didn't have a way back then to get the word out. They didn't, as you said, sort of assimilate all that knowledge ahead of time. And then once the horrible events started to happen, they didn't have any way. So it's great to hear that now that for, you know, hopefully future events like that could be prevented.
Thanks. We have hundreds of universities that have come on board, and 70% of the college students in Virginia are now covered by LiveSafe.
That's such an inspirational story, and as a mom of four who are at college, and actually any of my kids, no matter where they are, that's so important. But I had to ask you, was there an aha moment for you or an event that you're most proud of the work that you're doing at LiveSafe that made a difference?
I have to say that there have been a number of suicides that have been prevented. There have been acts of violence that were prepared that were interrupted because concerned students and employees communicated what they saw and heard and got the safety officials involved. So literally lives have been saved, and that's just been it's been incredibly rewarding work. And it's now gone beyond just universities to corporations who are saying, as a duty of care, we need to engage our employees and protect them. And so we've had a number of incidents that could have turned out very tragically that didn't because of the platform.
So one of my favorite sayings is, if you see something, say something. And what your product really does is it allows the millennials, the younger generation, to say something in a very easy way. Because sometimes even if you see something, you don't know who to say something to.
Exactly. So that's the biggest problem. I think what's happened, and we've seen all kinds of incidents with San Bernardino and Paris and the Oregon shootings, where people have suspicions or they see something and they want to share it and they literally don't know how to do it. And so now companies and universities are like, we're going to have our own mobile app and connect to a platform with our security officials so you can share whatever you see and you can do it anonymously. Interestingly, 75% of the tips that come in are people who don't want to necessarily get engaged but just want to take an action as a member of their community, of their university, or of their company, and they can do it and send it in, a picture, video, text, you know, without ever having to identify themselves, and then get a chat and a direct communication back from the security officials.
It's such a useful tool, but have you had any negative reactions to it?
You know, I think the question that people always have is privacy. And we really have spent a lot of time thinking about making it easy for people to opt in and to share their location at their own discretion and still to keep their anonymity even if they're communicating. And we had one incident where someone submitted a tip and it was around asking for help in terms of a coworker who had been assaulted, sexually assaulted, and they didn't know what to do. And in the anonymous chat back and forth, after a few times, what they revealed is actually that it was them that had been assaulted and they were looking for help. And I think if you didn't have that anonymity and that trust, you know, you couldn't have engaged people. So we're very proud of the kind of work that we do.
So Carolyn, let's just take a step back, right? How did you get involved in all of this? How did you get involved in technology at all? Because when I looked at your background, I saw that you were an English major. So congratulations, so was I.
Yay!
But then you've spent your whole career in technology. It looks like you've been with some larger firms, Bearing Point as an example, and then some startups too. So tell us a little bit about your story and how all that happened.
So my dad was an English major, and he was a CEO, and he said you need to go to college to learn how to learn, learn how to write, learn how to communicate. And if you have those skills, you can pretty much do anything. And when I was graduating from college, tech was just really emerging. And I interviewed for a lot of positions with you know, big traditional Procter & Gamble type companies, and I came across a small company that was doing software for medical offices and construction companies and project management software. And I wanted to go into sales. And so they loved that I could communicate, that I was hardworking, and that I was dynamic. So it was kind of serendipity. I fell into it, and just as tech was coming out, and I just have stuck with it ever since. I think the beauty of being in a career in technology is, first, the compensation is typically, you know, really, really strong, but also it's so evolutionary and changing all the time that you never feel like, you know, you're in the same role doing the same thing. And you think over the past 20 years that I've been in tech, just how much has happened. And the reason that I came to LiveSafe was, it was a trifecta for me. Three wonderful things came together. The first was, it's mobile, which I think is the most disruptive technology. It was well-financed, so it was growth-oriented with a great product in the market. And the product was a do-good, which I had never done before. I had done lots in technology, but not with this was saving lives, protecting people, and really doing good. And so to me, I was like, how could I not, you know, participate in this?
Have you had any mentors and did they give you any specific advice that helped you find your way to this passion that you have today?
So I think it starts with your parents. You know, my mom and dad, my dad was in sales and moved up and became a CEO, and my brothers and started in sales and he became a CEO, and we were just a family that always talked about work, and my mom was very, very powerful in terms of, you know, giving us confidence in doing anything. I've been blessed to work with some amazing women around the Beltway, you know, people like Cheryl Schwartz and Bobby Kilberg and Camille Alexander, just women who have, Michelle Perry, who've been in tech and who support each other, and there's such a community of everyone
the Leadership Foundry with WIT, you know, and trying to get women on boards. Probably the best advice I got was from my father, who basically said, don't ever let anybody intimidate you. You know, you define who you are and how you operate in challenging times and in bad times. So it was always be true to yourself, no matter what the situation is, and never be afraid to take any kind of position and do any kind of role, and cream rises to the top. And so for me, it was never what's the title or what's the compensation. It was, did I believe in the people?
So, you know, we often quote Sheryl Sandberg on this show, and we talk about the fact that she always says your career doesn't have to be a straight line. It can be a jungle gym. It looks like yours was a bit of a jungle gym. Is that a correct assessment?
Yes, it is. I did big companies. I did small companies. I did companies that were software, companies that were consulting. I launched a couple of companies. So yes, and I learned from all of them. And some were successes and some were not. And I think you just learn from everything, and it's just part of the path that you're on.
You know, one of the things that we think about is that the millennials, for whatever reason, really seem to feel like they have to have their whole career mapped out in front of them. And so many of the women that we talk to on the show tell us stories like yours about how they've had a lot of different experiences and learned from all of them, or ended up in a field that they never really dreamed that they would be in. So if you, you know, if you were giving advice to the younger generation, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that the technology that exists today is going to be obsolete and gone 5 years from now. So thinking that you have control over what the world is going to look like is ridiculous. You know, mobile phones, you know, 10 years ago, hardly anyone had them, and now they're an integral part of everybody's life. So the most important thing you can do is communicate, learn, share, grow, and be open to, you know, to change. And I think that is what the beauty of the technology field is.
So if you were to go back to your younger self as you were walking across the stage at Villanova graduating, we've heard your advice to the younger generation, but what would you tell you? What would you tell Carolyn to help her achieve the same success or maybe even beyond?
Don't be afraid. Be brave, be courageous, and trust in the people in your family and the friends that support and love you. And don't spend a minute's worth of time worrying about people who don't support you or what other people think. Be true to yourself.
Carolyn Perrant of LiveSafe. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.